Great.
Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very, very happy August 23rd, 2023 to everybody. This is Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing with the heat down there in the great state of Texas?
You know, Chase, doing well. It has been a long summer heat-wise, I think, for everybody, but we're really feeling it down here. You know, looking forward to, you know, this fall for several reasons, right? Get out of the heat here and we get some college football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. End of the season is fast, fast approaching. We're on a Wednesday, recording on Wednesday, and we have a game on Saturday. There's seven. They're calling this week zero. It's not officially week one. There's seven games, including Notre Dame playing their historical rival Navy in Ireland. A couple of other interesting games, Ohio at San Diego State and Vanderbilt hosting Hawaii. Not something we probably would watch in any other weekend of the season, but like for this, you know, for this week zero, it kind of makes sense. So we're going to do a little, you know, we're going to talk not so much about basketball this episode, and we're going to talk about football and talk a little bit about we don't know for sure. It's the swan song season for the Pac-12. Pac-4 now. And we don't know if this conference has a future ahead of it post this season. We do know that all the major powers of the conference pretty much are leaving after this season. So this is it. But I think there's like a kind of sentiment that the conference might go out with a bang here, because there's going to be like probably five teams that might be ranked throughout the season from the conference, and could even be more. So from head to toe, if you're following kind of like other podcasts talking about Pac-12 football or message boards talking about it, you're hearing a lot of kind of hype for, you know, this big final season. You have any thoughts on that? Just on, you know, from 35,000 feet.
I think you're absolutely right. It kind of feels like on paper, you know, the best Pac-12 since maybe like 2012 or so. And you know, we'll kind of run through some of the teams here and some of the matchups as well. But you talk about SC, Washington, Oregon State, who am I missing here? Utah, like all these teams are supposed to be pretty good. So gonna be a great year, I think, for the conference.
Yeah, and I think it's really kind of a combination of different factors, transfers into the conference, really the quarterbacks. I mean, we probably should make a big deal. I mean, it's really the quarterbacks driving this. The COVID season's helped a couple cases here and there too. But, you know, the conference has the Heisman returning quarterback, obviously, Heisman winning returning quarterback, obviously, Caleb Williams. But believe it or not, Caleb Williams did not throw for the most yards last year in the conference. It was Michael Penix, the transfer who landed at Washington last season, and he's back. So, I mean, and Washington was really good last season. They should be really good this season. Arizona wasn't as good. They still have Jaden Delora though, right? So, you know, I know he's had some he's had some issues here and there, but he had a huge season. Bo Nix is back in Oregon, and Oregon's been publicizing him as a, you know, potential Heisman candidate. I don't know if that's totally realistic, but he's had his moments. He got banged up at the end of last season that definitely kind of slowed down their offense. And then there's Cam Rising out of Utah. He, you know, blew out his knee at the end of last season, so he's still hobbled. I don't know how much of a impact he's going to have at all this season. He was obviously critical in when, you know, Utah needed to step up and beat USC in those big games, and he was critical in those games. But that's kind of like, I think a lot of the focus is just these quarterbacks coming back. What are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, if you want to go further down the list, right, Oregon State has DJ Uiagalelei, who just transferring in from
Clemson.
Clemson.
That's
He was
right.
named the starter and, obviously, like, wasn't too good at Clemson. But, he had a few moments there. I think they went like 9-3 once in one of the years when he was, I guess it was last year when he was the starter. And obviously was a hot shot recruit. I think number like one or two in the country from St. John Bosco back in the day. And you got Cam Ward coming back for Washington State too. He had some moments. So it's the best quarterback season I can remember. I know Oregon is like already promoting Bo Nix's Heisman candidacy with like billboards across the country, which is kind of crazy to think about, just given what Auburn fans thought of Bo Nix, a few years ago. But the Pac-12 like isn't quite the SEC defense wise, so it's a league you can put up numbers in for sure.
Yeah, so maybe we could just we'll talk a little bit. I think most people are saying USC is the favorite, which makes sense because SC finished second technically last year. Obviously, Caleb Williams got dinged up in the Pac-12 championship game against Utah, but Utah is probably going to be missing their returning quarterback. So SC is like the top team with their quarterback coming back, and he won the Heisman. But you really got to take a look at Washington as well because they had a really strong season last year, just barely missed out on the Pac-12 championship game last year, and they have their quarterback back as well. I think if you're looking at kind of like assessing an overall kind of a holistic view of the conference, I think there's pretty clearly like, let's say a top tier, and then there's a middle tier potentially, and then a bottom tier. So just briefly, the bottom tier you're probably looking at is Stanford, who had a really rough year last year, and now they have former Cal quarterback Troy Taylor coming in to be the coach. Which is going to be a major change for Stanford. Stanford had a kind of a really interesting run starting with Jim Harbaugh, and that carried over. But that era I think is gone now. And that program's got to be rebuilt. I don't think it's going to be done one season. And I don't know if Troy Taylor is the guy to do it, but we'll see. Colorado's going to be interesting. Completely different team. I don't expect them to be all that competitive, but they're a big story because they have prime time. Deion Sanders has come over from the FCS to be the head coach there. I think basically turned over all the personnel, it seemed like a couple of maybe two times. Just total rebuild of the program. I think that's it's probably too much of a shock to the system to expect too many results in season one. But I mean, it was a comprehensive just churning of personnel. And then Arizona State is going to, Dillingham comes over from Oregon. That's usually, Arizona State's been a pretty good program over the years. I was not a fan at all of the Herm Edwards coaching decision to hire him and leave him around there. I don't know where they're going to be, but I don't expect them to do too much. And then Cal. It's been, Cal has not been terrible under Justin Wilcox, but it's been rough for them to actually kind of really seriously compete for, anything like approaching a conference championship. So I don't know, in your mind, are those the kind of the bottom tier, or do you view it a different way?
Yeah, I think you have it nailed with that. A couple of these teams, it's kind of hard to peg like whether they're going to be bottom or middle, like, trying to distinguish between Arizona State and UCLA is like kind of tough. I think UCLA is just kind of like a little bit better version of ASU. Like both are probably going to be starting freshman quarterbacks. You have like a little bit more talent on UCLA, but Chip Kelly hasn't recruited all that well there either. So I kind of view it as like you've got SC, Washington, Oregon, Oregon State, Utah as your top. And then beyond that, like I don't really know. But, I do agree with you. Like I think Stanford is probably – well, no. I think Colorado is the worst, and then probably followed by Stanford, and then it gets into like a little bit of dicey territory there.
So one interesting question for UCLA is going to be who starts quarterback. This is like breaking news for today. It sounds like Ethan Garbers is actually going to probably start against Coastal Carolina. Dante Moore still in the running, I guess. I'm guessing Colin Schley, he's the transfer from Kent State, right? No longer in the picture for potentially starting that game. I love Dante Moore as a prospect. I think he was maybe the top quarterback prospect to come into, you know, this class of 2023. But, you know, asking any true freshman to start from day one, it will be an issue. And there were already some, like, off the field, things going on with Moore and stuff connected to NIL, stuff like that. So I'm not sure that that's, like, UCLA is a match made in heaven for him, but we'll see about that. I'm with you. And that, you know, one other school just to, you know, throw out there, I think that, you know, they could go kind of like middle, like in, or maybe a little above Arizona with Jaden Delora. And you know, Arizona's a team that's, you know, got Jed Fish in there. I've always liked Jed Fish as an offensive mind. You know, teams will start coming for them a little more this season, probably because they played so well on offense last season. I still think they're probably, you know, around a 6-6 team, probably, but I'm just not sure. What are your thoughts about Washington State? I think Cameron Ward's coming back to play quarterback there, right?
Yeah, I like them a good amount. They kind of feel like a 6-6, 7-5 team to me, but Jake Dickert's like a pretty good defensive mind up there. They've got an early test against Wisconsin, who they beat last year, I believe, in Madison. So they've got them coming to Pullman. And Wisconsin's ranked, they're top 20, and they've got Luke Fickell as coach now. So they're going to be favored in that game. But if Wazzu is able to pull that off, that would be huge for the conference. And, you know, they'd probably vault into the top 25 if they did it. So,
yeah. And, it would be in Washington State's definitely a program that, you know, they like Oregon State, by the way, are both going to want to show a lot this season, right? For obvious reasons. And, you know, they had a decent year last year. I think they ended up dropping those last two games, but, where they finished last year, I guess it's 7-6, something like that. I think they're kind of limited by Ward at quarterback. I'm not a huge fan of his, but you know, just overall as a program, I think they're a strong program. Oregon State, I guess, you know, they were a really good defense last year, by far, like the best defense USC played all season. Jonathan Smith is the coach. They're to me probably like a 8-4 type team that could even maybe be better.
I like them a lot. Yeah, I could see 9-3, 10-2. The thing with them at quarterback, right? Like they had Ugalele, but Ben Golbranson started several games for them last year. He got, you know, beat out by DJ here in camp, but he's very capable. And even their third string guy, Aiden Shiles, he's a freshman. He kind of rose late in the rankings. I think someone rated him as like a top 50 recruit, and he had a very good spring game. So like they have a lot of depth there. Jonathan Smith's obviously done a really good job with their program. They are a bit limited by NIL. So one of their starting linebackers transferred to LSU and got a big NIL payday. So that like might hurt them a little bit, but you know, they beat Oregon last year. They almost beat USC last year. So there's, you know, a lot to like about their kind of direction and their, you know, their present.
Yeah. And then, you know, the top kind of four teams, I think consensus from everybody is Oregon, Washington, Utah, and USC in some order there. Most kind of putting USC at the top. Any thoughts on, you know, what are you looking for in those like top four schools that say that will make one stand out more than the other?
You know, USC's got the best quarterback pretty clearly. I think offensively USC is just going to be very hard to stop this year with Caleb. You know, even Utah, like USC kind of moved the ball at will against those guys last year, and they were a pretty good defense up until Caleb got hurt in the Pac-12 championship. So, you know, until proven otherwise, I think USC deserves the top spot there. You know, the big question is obviously the defense, right? Like, you overall personnel, you got a lot better in the front seven. And now it's kind of like up to Alex Grinch here to see if he can have a competent defense to supplement the offense. And, you know, with the other teams like Utah, they've got that big game against Florida. They lost at the Swamp last year. Have them coming to Salt Lake this year. So Utah will be favored in that game. And that's kind of a take care of business game, I think, for them. And Washington, I mean, losing their athletic director, and, you know, we can talk about that as well. But, you know, year two for Kalen DeBoer, he had a very good year one and blew out Steve Sarkisian in the bowl game. Have a, you know, quarterback coming back, it's going to get a lot of Heisman hype. They're really good, and they're more than just Michael Penix. I mean, they've got Braylon Trice on D and Romo Dunze at wide receiver. Those are two potential first round picks right there. So there's lots of like. I think I would have it USC 1, Washington 2, and then I would just go Utah over Oregon, just because I trust Kyle Whittingham, I think, a little bit more than Dan Lanning at this point.
Yeah, and I'd probably reverse those two only because of the situation with Cam Rising. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I'm not sure what kind of quarterback play they're going to get early in the season, but we will find out. I think, you know, certainly at some point Cam Rising is going to take over there, and he'll be decently effective, is my guess. Yeah, but otherwise, I think I pretty much agree with you. Do you want to just very, you know, just kind of high level talk? Well, let's talk about some of these out of conference games that you have an eye on. You mentioned a few of them already. What else are you kind of, you know, keeping your eye on for out of conference play for the Pac-12?
Yeah, so you have a lot of these marquee games, and you start the year with five teams in the top 20 of the AP poll. So you're starting off on a really good baseline, right? Like, so much of the key to the non-con are these preseason rankings. That's kind of what the SEC does every year, right? They get all these, you know, super high preseason rankings, and then they play cupcakes so they don't move down, and then they play each other. So, you know, even if the teams aren't any good, like, they look good because you beat like a top 15 or a top 10 team, even though that team might end up going 6-6 or 5-7. So these are huge. You know, we talked about a couple of them, Washington State, Wisconsin, that's going to be a big one. Utah, Florida is going to be a big one. Washington plays Boise State and Michigan State. They're going to be favored by probably like 8-15, I would say, in both those games. But two games you have to take care of business of in. ASU, you know, they're going to have an opportunity against Oklahoma State. They will go into that game as an underdog, but, you know, you never know what can happen. And then UCLA plays San Diego State. That's pretty interesting. They should win that, but San Diego State, they've had some pesky teams over the years. And then Cal and Auburn is kind of like a weirdly bad, interesting game. I don't know who's going to be favored there because Auburn's not very good. But you know, we'll see. So I don't know. Oregon, Texas Tech is also in Lubbock. That's going to be, you know, that'll be a hyped game. So it kind of feels like this year more than others, maybe it's because the Pac-12 teams are better, but you seem to have more of these kind of intriguing non-conference matchups than you usually do.
Yeah. So I will definitely agree on the, key games for the conference, just as a kind of keeping teams right ranked. Oregon on the road in Texas Tech in Lubbock, as you said, that's, you know, it's really important for the conference, and Oregon wins that game. Oregon, you know, they did beat Ohio State a couple of years ago, but they've had a track record of like playing early season games against like SEC teams and getting like just boat raced. So it's important that does not happen. You know, this is obviously not an SEC team. It's a very winnable game, but just something to keep in mind. Utah at Baylor. I mean, That's Utah's been coming as a ranked team. Baylor's no slouch. You know, you need to make sure you show up for that game. I'm not sure if this is accurate. I mean, I'm seeing listed as like a 9 a.m. local start, but on the East Coast, I really hope that's not the case, because that would be, I guess it's not, I mean, Utah's mountain time, but Baylor is what, central time. So like, you know, I don't know why the games would be starting that early in any event. Washington at Michigan State is important. You know, this was a game that Washington won at home kind of convincingly. I mean, I think Michigan State made it a little interesting in the second half last year, but it was like such a blowout early that it really kind of like set the stage for Washington becoming a ranked team last year. And then kind of Michigan State faded, didn't look that hot. But, you know, going to East Lansing, it's going to be it's going to be a completely different game from just like location.
And I can interject here. So we have a few lines on these games too. So I'll just kind of chime in with the lines here. So Washington, they're laying 11.5 against Michigan State. So yep, a clear favorite, but like you said, you're on the road. Oregon is favored by 3 against Texas Tech. So very winnable, like you said, but you know, it'll be a battle there. So sorry, I cut you off, but keep going.
No. And I think I'd probably wrapped up the ones that are on my list for at least early season. Obviously, as we get later in the season, USC plays at Notre Dame in October. That's going to be a huge game. You know, I think later on future podcasts, we'll talk about USC schedule, which is heavily backloaded. You know, getting through that kind of just is I think there's going to be like four ranked teams played in 5 weeks or something. It's pretty crazy. So let's, I guess, maybe talk a little bit about SC from a personnel standpoint. You know, what are you looking at the defense? You know, things are very kind of tight-lipped, you know, when it comes to Lincoln Riley. He does, you know, you don't have all the, you know, fans out there practice like Pete Carroll used to have. I mean, you're kind of just relying on, you know, just leaks here and there. So I don't even know if we've ever seen a depth chart. I'm not sure who to expect. I know there was an injury from one of our defense tackles returning. But you know, what are your expectations on like who's going to be getting key minutes at different positions and what's going to make, you know, the difference for SC?
I think it seems really up in the air, more so than in like some of these past years, especially like in past years where you have a top like 5 or so team. You know, and a lot of that I think is just due to these transfers, right? Like you have a lot of like bodies with like some production. And then you have some of these transfers who are like former 5-stars, but don't have production. So, it's hard to like really know. I guess like if I had to take a crack at who the defensive starters are, I would go Jack Sullivan, Keon Bars, Bear Alexander, Jamil Muhammad, Mason Cobb, Tackett Curtis, Sierra Wright, Kalen Bullock, Max Williams, and Damani Jackson. But, you know, like I could be way off base there. Like Christian Roland Wallace, I liked him a lot out of the portal. I think he'll play. I know Anthony Lucas, like he dropped weight, which was really weird to me. Because I kind of pegged him as a 3 technique down lineman. And now he's trying to like, you know, he was 6'5", like 270, 280 coming in. And now he's like 255 trying to be like a rush end, which I don't really get, but maybe he can do it. And then I guess on offense, like the big question is just how do you solve the like receiver room thing, right? Because you've got so many guys like Brennan Rice, Dorian Singer, Mario Williams, Tosh Washington, Michael Jackson, Zach Branch, right? Like you have all these capable bodies, but at the end of the day, you can only put like 3 to 5 on the field at a time, right? So,
yeah,
you know, I think just the overall defensive mix and then the wide receiver questions are the two things I'm looking forward to having answered.
Right. Probably should just mention Eric Gentry. Both he, Shane Lee, and he are having are dinged up. Apparently, may or may not go for game one. I obviously, you know, Shane Lee, we've had very detailed, not only podcast but video demonstrations of some of his shortcomings on the field. So I think from a leadership standpoint, it's great to have him. But from a performance on the field, I think you're hopefully Mason Cobb is going to be delivering a lot more than what we were seeing from Shane Lee last season.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the offense is just, you know, there's just a lot of talent there. And, you know, Lincoln Riley is, you know, it's hard, you know, who's a better offensive coach than he is? I mean, he'll get guys involved, and I'm very curious. I mean, one of the, you know, I'm one of the things I want to bring up too, just very briefly, is, you know, do you think there will be any effort to try to get some like early series for Miller Moss? You know, try, you know, just trying to get him, you know, a little more, you know, kind of real game action. Or not, or we're just kind of doing things, you know, kind of standard.
I think there should be, you know, like, I don't think you want a situation where you feel like so forced to play Caleb, kind of like they did in the Pac-12 championship game when he clearly wasn't 100%. So I hope they do. And I think there were opportunities to do it last year and they just didn't do it. I don't know if it was like a trying to pad Caleb's Heisman stats sort of thing, or kind of what the
Good afternoon. Where
I think it makes a lot of sense to do, and we'll see. I mean, I guess the other question is, like, you know, Caleb's probably going to enter the NFL draft next year, and you've got Miller Moss, you've got Malachi Nelson. Like, in theory, you'd want just to get a look at those guys against live bullets, just to see how they do.
Yeah. Now, obviously, Malachi Nelson, you know, you can redshirt him, but I'm not sure you want to do that, but you can do it. Whereas Miller Moss, you definitely do not want to redshirt. I guess we should mention, too, before we get out of here, we should mention a certain recruit who committed this week. I don't know. Do you want to take a first crack at Julian Lewis?
Sure. Yeah. I know ESPN rated him the top like player in high school football, regardless of class. So, you know, obviously, like, he's very hyped. I've only seen about 5 to 7 minutes of film on him, but he actually reminds me more of Bryce Young than of Caleb Williams. I think Caleb has a little bit stronger of an arm, and then maybe just like stronger of a build. Like, Caleb is kind of sneaky, like super strong for his size. Lewis is a bit bigger than Bryce. Like, I think Bryce is more in the like 5'10, 5'11 range, whereas I think Lewis is probably like 6 foot, maybe 6'5". But he's not physically that big. And, you know, he's got a couple of years here of high school ball left to put on weight and to add some strength. So I don't think he's a finished product by any means. But he has really good escapability. He can throw on the run. He can run when needed. And he's got really good touch on his like deep and intermediate passing. So it's a great get. I mean, I'm really excited about him, and I think he'll be the number one recruit in this in the country, whether he reclasses to 2025 or stays in 2026. Definitely seems like an impact guy.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot speak more highly of him. Huge to me, absolutely enormous get. You know, I'm trying to get like tracked down. I mean, from what I'm seeing, he was born in 2007. I don't know if it was beginning of the year or the end of the year. There has been talk about reclassification all the way up to like two classes of 2024, which would be pretty crazy, obviously. You know, I think it's very important SC try to get him on campus. He is about as strong for his age, about as good of a good looking prospect or quarterback as you're ever going to see. I mean, just moves great, throws great, you know, great arm talent. No, he does not have the lower body build that Caleb Williams has. Quite frankly, very few quarterbacks have that. I mean, that's, you just don't get a lot of that kind of strength that Caleb Williams has. But, you know, Julian, yeah, he is much more like a Bryce Young. You know, more slight build, but he is taller, and I think he will have a bigger frame overall. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of his, and I do hope he reclassifies up.
Yep.
You know, and we, you know, if we can track down what his true date of birth is, we can figure out, oh, get him on campus when he's, you know, turning 18 in the fall, maybe, if that's applicable. Certainly not out of the question. I huge get for USC. Anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
Maybe just get like initial thoughts here on Jen Cohen being named AD. Now
Oh
that that's
gosh,
official,
how do we miss that? Great call. Okay, so my take on this is that she is a professional hire. She's legit. She's qualified for the job. Would she have necessarily been my first choice? I don't think so, probably, but it's hard to get your first choice. I think I posted this before. There was a moment in 2019 where she looked like an absolute genius, like the hottest athletic director in the country. She had Chris Peterson, obviously, and she had just hired Mike Hopkins, and he had won a Pac-12 championship in the second year, the first one Washington had God knows how many years. Right after that, things kind of went very quickly sideways. Chris Peterson resigned. She decided to make Jimmy Legge the head coach after that. And that was a really failed experiment. And at the same time, the Mike Hopkins era kind of turned negative when it looked more and more like Hopkins just was not able to win with his own recruits. And we've seen since then him constantly, raiding the transfer portal, trying to find players to even kind of get to like a 500 team. He had his best season in a couple of years this past year, but he just has not been able to win with his own players. She did, and because of the finances of the athletic department, she'd given Hopkins a huge contract after he won the Pac-12 championship, and he hasn't lived up to it, and they haven't been able to replace him because of the financial concerns. So Washington has missed the NCAA tournament now for several years in a row. Jimmy Legge thing seemed to have been resolved very quickly, which I am impressed by. And they got Kalen DeBoer in there, and that he seems to be, I mean, obviously very early, but he seems to be a really good pick. So that's a credit to her. Would I have given Hopkins the same contract that Jen Cohen did if I was in her situation? I may have, I may have bought that. I don't know how much I can hold against her for that. I seriously doubt I would have probably hired Jimmy Legge, but that's just me. So anyway, those are my thoughts. The Jimmy Legge thing does scare me because, I am very loath to hire from within a program unless you really feel like you have some like hot shot offensive coordinator that's, leading your team to the wins. I don't think, that didn't obviously reflect with Jimmy Legge. So any thoughts you have?
Yeah, I mean, she's clearly like a professional AD. I think she's done pretty well in the hiring. So like she was involved in the Chris Peterson hire initially. Like I think she was like the number two up there at the time, but apparently she was a big part of that process. I probably would have given Mike Hopkins the extension. I think Hopkins was a pretty good hire at the time. Like he was, one of the other candidates at USC when they hired Andy Enfield, SoCal ties like to modern day. And then he won back-to-back coach of the year awards at Washington, right? Like when you have a coach who's starts his tenure as back-to-back coach of the year and like, presumably other big time schools were trying to poach him or I don't think she gives him that extension. I don't think that was a mistake in the moment. I actually liked the Jimmy Legge hire at the time too. I mean, the background on him, he had very good defenses up at Washington. They gave him play calling duties over one of Peterson's guys because they thought he was a rising star. Nick Saban tried to hire him as DC when Kirby Smart went to Georgia. And he turned it down because he was kind of a coach in waiting at Washington by then. I know that ASU in Colorado wanted to hire him as head coach. So like he was a really hot name, both as a coach and as a recruiter. And it just didn't work out. But I don't think that was bad process elevating him. It's nothing like elevating Clay Helton to be the head coach at USC.
No, I agree. I definitely agree with that. I do think it's an issue where you don't have the, I think the you look at like, okay, like Kirby Smart was a defensive coordinator at Alabama for many years and then was, you know, chosen to be the head coach of Georgia, and it's obviously worked out wonderfully. But generally speaking, like, unless you have like a, I'm not a huge fan of making the defensive coordinators head coaches, unless you have like really independent information that you know that they're going to, you know, be able to win at a different program or win at the same program without that head coach. And I, you know, I'm just looking at what's going on with Oklahoma right now. I don't like that kind of setup. It always makes me a little nervous. And I just think there was too much hype around Jimmy Lake and not enough meat on the bone, but That's just me.
Yeah, but like you said though, right? Like, credit where credit is due. They got off Lake in 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Like, Clay Helton was the head coach at USC for 7 years.
Absolutely. No, that's that. Absolutely. Now, obviously, he had some off the field issues too. But like, yes, that was a huge, huge deal. All right. Okay. I guess we'll do another basketball podcast soon. You know, yep. there's some visits have been scheduled, and SC really needs to start, you know, we're heading to the end of August. So we're going to have to probably get some more of the recruiting class kind of firmed up. We'll do that in the next pod.
Yep. Sounds great.
Okay. Well, until then, everybody, fight on.
Fight on.